He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Right, kia ora and welcome to Voices.
Just before we went into the Level 3 lockdown last week, I spoke to three guests who represent New Zealand's ethnic communities. Priyanka Radhakrishnan, Minister for Ethnic Communities and Associate Minister for Social Development and Employment, Melissa Lee, National Party Spokesperson for Ethnic Communities, and Gulroz Gurrahman of the Green Party. Great to have you all here. I'm particularly kicked that this is a room full of women here. Shout out to Alex, who's in the studio there operating for us. The government has decided to restart the refugee resettlement and intake this year after a hiatus since last March, aiming for 250 new refugees by June this year. That's about one-sixth of the yearly quota of 1,500. So will the quota be fulfilled this year? Minister.
Yeah, look, so we're doing that in a way that's phased and staged so that, of course, giving in, you know, taking into account MIQ facilities and keeping the safety of New Zealanders top of mind. That does mean that we are unlikely to meet our quota for this year, given COVID restrictions.
So what happens to those, the remainder of them? Are we going to be playing catch up next year?
Doesn't transfer over to next year.
What are your thoughts, Gulroz?
The Green Party fought really hard to have what we call humanitarian categories of people included in the phased border opening. And so we were really, really happy to see that the quota was going to reopen in some way. But what we do want to hold is that there are other crises happening in the world other than the COVID crisis. And in fact, the refugee crisis is only really worsening. So what we'd like to see is that the Refugee Resettlement Centre out in Mangere is kitted out in a way that it can be used as a quarantine facility. That would be really easy. Refugees are already a population that arrive and spend about 6 weeks in a separate facility and aren't in the community in any case. So that would be ideal as a way that we can reopen our quota and do our fair share to sort of address all of the common crises that we face around the globe.
At a time where businesses are obviously taking a huge knock during the pandemic, we're looking at massive constraints across businesses, economy, the country. Are we doing the right thing by putting humanitarian interests ahead of commercial interests? Melissa Lee, what are your thoughts on this?
We have responsibilities to the world, and we have actually taken on a position where we have agreed to take on certain numbers of refugees. And I just want to take a point in terms of what Gulroz was actually talking about. I think the Mangere Refugee Centre, where the refugees come in, they spend about 6 weeks. And my concern there is actually that are they equipped to actually sort of emerge out of those 6 weeks and actually, you know, be able to live in New Zealand in a more comfortable way than they currently are. I mean, for example, there are a lot of refugee community who can't speak the English language. They're not able to actually get jobs. And where are the support that we are, you know, obviously not providing for them? And I think these are some of the issues that we need to actually
focus on. Just a little bit of a caveat, I guess, that this the issues that we're discussing here falls within the immigration minister's portfolio and, of course, the minister responsible for COVID-19. However, one of the things that I just wanted to add to this korero is about employment, given that Gulroz mentioned it, and that is something that comes out a fair bit in terms of feedback from various, you know, new migrant communities plus former refugee or resettled communities and just more broadly ethnic communities as well. Under the government's wider employment strategy, there is a specific action plan that sits looking at what the barriers are for these communities, former refugee community, new migrants, and ethnic communities more broadly. And so that was put on pause a little bit last year with COVID. There is a lot of work that needs to be done there, despite what we're also doing to manage COVID on the side. So we will be picking that back up as well.
I think what I would just add, which is I think I feel is missing, and I think is what the Green Party was trying to bring to the COVID response planning as we contributed to it last term as part of the government, is, you know, when we talk about a humanitarian category, we're not only talking about people that have suffered from a humanitarian disaster, literally. We are sometimes talking about, for example, international students who have in good faith invested in a life in New Zealand. We're talking about partners of migrant workers. We're talking about people who have contributed to our communities or invested in our communities and are part of our communities. And what does fairness look like to them? Because I think COVID, we can all agree, has really, really highlighted and brought to the fore the kind of inadequacies in our system, but also discrimination. And when we talk about barriers in employment, that's almost a sanitized word. We're talking about discrimination, we're talking about prejudice, and we're talking about what has kept, for example, migrant workers from being able to access a benefit in the same way that everybody else got in the COVID response. What is keeping partners and children of migrants who've been living here for years and years, separated from them now for a year, stuck overseas, because of visa categories that we were applying to them that also kept them from certain employment rights in a pre-COVID world, and is now, you know, creating massive rips in their families. So there's all sorts of things that we do need to address, but I think it's at the base of them, the reason these are ethnic community issues is that our communities are experiencing discrimination.
I think you'll acknowledge now that migrants are eligible for the emergency benefit.
It's taken a while.
It's taken a while, and we've lost a coalition partner. I'll just point that out as well. So we can't, you know, we've opened up MIQ facilities as much as possible. We're taking in more people through those facilities than we did at the start. But we've got to make sure that the health system is in place so that we do it properly. Within that, it's not an either or. Firstly, New Zealanders have to be able to come back in terms of the refugees who come in, the international students who come in. What we're trying to do is within that, open it up as we can in a way that's safe.
I recognise that these are issues that fall under the ambit of immigration, but invariably it is a pathway to the building of future ethnic community members, so to speak. So I think they're inextricably linked in that sense. So if you talk about the limited number of spaces when you're looking at, say, for example, 1,000 students being allowed into the country. A large part of our ethnic communities is made of people who came to New Zealand as international students themselves. And I was one of them. And I got my first internship with Melissa Lee in television many, many moons ago. So, Melissa Lee, with tertiary institutes feeling the pinch now that new international students have stopped arriving, what is the implication of that? Is that really sufficient in terms of helping businesses turn around?
Export education is a humongous billions and billions dollars worth.
It's $4 billion a year.
Yeah, exactly. It's huge. And, you know, it's not just the export education. There are subsidiary businesses that are actually linked, whether it's actually homestay parents or whether it's actually, you know, eateries or everything that is actually linked. We are all linked in that sense. And so one of the things that we try to actually do at the time of lockdown as a National Party, we actually sort of try to suggest to the government that, you know, perhaps we need to work with these tertiary institutions or all of the educational institutions to facilitate students coming back because they're here for long term. It's not like they're here for 1 week, 2 week tour and then go back to their home countries, but they're here on a long term basis. And if they test negative in their home countries, they come here, they isolate for 2 weeks, and they're able to actually get onto their education, and they stay, you know, perhaps 1 or 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, depending on their courses. I think that is something that we need to really sort of get a move on. And I think, businesses are reliant on it. And I think the government needs to actually, you know, quickly take action on that.
Now, the Office of Ethnic Communities becomes a ministry this July. Will there be a core group made of community members to consult with on the design of this? And within that, will there be opportunities for more marginalised communities to actually have their voices heard?
Yeah, look, so we have announced, and I'm incredibly excited by the fact that we have committed to a Ministry for Ethnic Communities from July this year. There will be new functions for that ministry as well that won't be embedded by 1st July, so just putting that out there, that will be an ongoing piece of work as well. In terms of consultation, I'm clear that we absolutely have to do that. We will also be consulting in terms of the skills needed for the chief executive position. I have asked officials to look at ways in which we can do that, just bearing in mind that we've had close to 35 hui in terms of the Royal Commission report and the government's response to those recommendations there. And I'm mindful of the fact that many within our community experience consultation fatigue. So I'm trying to balance that with also the need to not just go to a core group, but to go wider.
Melissa Lee, what are your thoughts on this?
you know, what we want to make sure is that we want a ministry that is actually functioning like a ministry, not a Department of Internal Affairs, as what it seemed to be originally when I actually looked at it. And I think the minister did in fact say, you know, at a meeting, for the first time, the chief executive will have direct access to the minister. And my question is, does the, you know, director now not have direct access to the minister? I mean, that is something that has always existed. I think, you know, it needs to be clearer. And, you know, what we don't want is ethnic communities being marginalized, and it's not going to be some second-rate ministry. I mean, we want to make sure that ethnic communities have the fully-fledged ministry to actually, you know, deal with their concerns, their issues and policies that can actually influence government.
I just respond to the questions around the structure of the ministry first, because a policy team has been funded as well within that. So part of what I want to get across is the fact that, you know, a population agency that represents about 213 different ethnicities, there will always need to be a community engagement function. Currently, the office has that. We will retain that. But the CE will also need to sit at the public sector leadership table to ensure that we can drive policy across government agencies with an ethnic communities lens as well. So
when I talk to community groups, there's a sense of concern around government agencies often supporting funding ethnic community groups where there could be a festering of division. That includes things like intra-racism and Islamophobia that exist within community groups. Does that worry you?
Yes.
I think it worries all of us.
Yeah, that is worrying. That has also been raised by a few people at the various Royal Commission engagement, HUI. The other piece of work that I'm leading for the government is around social cohesion. And all of this works against that. I have raised it with the NZSIS, and that is something that I'll be monitoring. So we can't willy-nilly stop funding organisations because someone has told us an individual in there is saying something. We're taking it seriously. And then the next steps of what we do there is something that I am mindful of and considering.
I think, thanks for confirming the willy-nilly approach will not be adopted. no, but I do think this is a really serious concern. And I think the two issues that I want to see, you know, be advanced by the ministry or approaches, rather, I guess, is that this needs to be a whole-of-government approach. Mm. Ethnic community engagement and the interests of our communities being prioritised does need to be taken into account when we talk about education, when we talk about housing, roads. You know, our communities aren't just sort of experiencing ethnic issues, so to speak. And this is all forward-looking. Obviously, the ministry hasn't even been set up, so it's not a criticism. It's just a criticism of the way that things have fallen through the cracks in the past.
You know, as diversity increases here, is there enough being done to help ethnic communities deal with their own existing intra issues, such as stereotypes, such as prejudice against their own community members?
We all have a role to play in this. Government has a role to play in leadership in various various issues and, you know, raising awareness, I guess, that the fact that these issues exist as well. But equally, communities have a role to play in terms of looking inward and looking at how they change things as well. So there's a certain amount that we can do, and that's what I've been talking about for the last 4 weeks across the country with the Royal Commission engagement, HUI. But equally, I've been trying to get the message out there, and there is awareness of that we need to look inward as well.
Great. Thank you very much, Minister Priyanka Radhakrishnan, Gulroz Gurrahman and Melissa Lee. Thanks very much for joining me on Voices today.
Thanks for having us.
This episode of Voices was audio engineered by Claudia Sykes. Tim Watkin is the executive producer for podcasts and series. And once again, I'm Kadambri Raghukumar. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, you can follow us on RNZ_voices on Instagram. And you can catch all of our episodes on Apple, Spotify, Google, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.